If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live.
This is a place for crazy people.
Natalie Cheel and Rick Munn.
I think you'll listen.
TNT.
Hello, the second power hour now of Open Line. I'm Natalie Cheel. Rick Munn is with me. Gemma Cooper is coming up as well. We've got guests Hayden Appleby and Ash, aka Dutty Munty. Munty? Monkey. I don't know. Look up the right one. Dutty Monkey, even. And 12th of March 2024. A kickoff story for you. This was in the Daily Fail. Getting lazy Brits to walk just 5,000 steps 3 times a week could save the NHS $15 billion a year, apparently. I'm not often agree with them, I would say. But on this one, I think a lot of people could just get out there and do some steps, and it could do everybody the world of good. Take some personal responsibility. I can't say the exact amount it would save the NHS, but any story that encourages people to get out walking, get off their phones and get on the real out in the real world, it can't be a bad thing, can it, Rick?
No, and 5,000 steps a day isn't very far, especially if you're only doing it 3 times a week. So there's really no excuse. Even if you actually walk around the supermarket or walk around the shops, you're going to do at least 5,000 steps without even going out into the fresh air. So try and get active if you can, not only for your physical health as well, Natalie, I must admit, and believe me, I'm going to be racking up some steps after the show here today for my own mental health. I would advise maybe 30 to 40,000 for me before bedtime tonight. It can only do me good physically and mentally.
But it doesn't sound like a lot, and especially for someone like you that walks all the time. But unfortunately, we are of a generation that are stressed, that are, disillusioned, and not many people are getting out there and doing any physical exercise. So, it's quite a good aim to start with, at least. And as Rick says, it will clear your head. It will be good for you physically. So, that was my suggestion for the day. Yeah, see if you can do it each day, 5,000 steps. Unless you've got a disability or an injury, anyone can manage, I would say. And I know Rick Sevin's got to add as well about our online chat.
I haven't been able to keep a direct tab on this because obviously we're live on there at the minute, but we've had to suspend our live chat at the minute, which is obviously a cornerstone of TNT, tntradio.live. Normally you can go on there and leave your thoughts, comments and opinions. So for anybody that's listening in, the studio have told me that they're currently moderating and weeding out some trolls. I believe we've been spammed incessantly by trolls in the live chat, a lot of people causing a lot of trouble. I haven't seen it personally myself, so I can't comment on it, but I know they're cleaning that up at the minute because it's very disruptive to all the good people out there that are just simply trying to connect and leave their thoughts, views and opinions. So please be patient with us there. Normal service absolutely shall be resumed sooner rather than later, but we'll have to make sure that it's a nice place to be and people aren't getting their heads done in by inhabiting the live chat. So please be patient. And one last thing, a shout out to Lynn, and I know Lynn's listening at the minute. She made some very nice comments to me earlier on today, and thank you very much, Lynn. You know who you are, and I hope you're enjoying the show. So anyway, that's just a show.
Can I also just say a big happy birthday to Kieran O'Callaghan? I know he listens in every day, and his dad sent me a message. He's 25 today. So Kieran, a big happy birthday to you, and I hope you enjoy all your celebrations today. And time for the headlines now with Gemma here at today's News Talk.
Be a part of the conversation.
I want representation I can trust.
Have your say.
Biden isn't doing enough.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's all happening today, Gemma. And what news have you got for us?
Well, I've got an update for you since we spoke at the top of the last hour. Roads remain closed around Windsor Castle after a three-vehicle accident, which left one vehicle crashed into the front wall of Windsor Castle on Thames Street. Road remains closed and traffic is being diverted. Emergency services were at the scene. That comes just 3 days after a car crashed into the gates of Buckingham Palace. Second headline is one of the UK's biggest workplace mental health service providers, talking about mental health there at the top of the show, which serves nearly 13 million employees here in the UK is now under investigation for allegedly handling calls from vulnerable people while they're at work poorly. Third, an asylum seeker has blown the whistle and spoken out about how illegal immigrants deliberately convert to Christianity to stay in the UK at a time when the Home Affairs Select Committee is set to investigate the matter. And our last headline, a 101-year-old woman from Somerset in the south of the UK has been told by her local authority to fix her own potholes in the road when she phoned to complain about the state of a particular lane, 21 potholes in this lane in a small town in Somerset, and they're complaining about the state of the roads where she lives. So that's a snapshot of the UK and some of the biggest stories at the top of this hour here on TNT.
Thanks, Gemma. And I was going to say, particularly that story from Windsor this morning, it's not the first story we've seen in recent months about car crashes. I remember the one last year about Downing Street. I think there was one at Buckingham Palace. Is there a trend happening, Rick? Car crashes? Do they get called terror attacks, maybe? Extremism?
Well, it could be. And let's be honest, somebody could get in their car and decide, I want to use this as a weapon. But let's be honest, what damage are they going to do? The security around Buckingham Palace and all these royal places or Downing Street is absolutely, you can't drive a car in there and cause any real amount of damage. It'll certainly attract attention. It'll certainly attract news headlines. But in reality, you won't get any real damage done by that unless it's packed full of plastic explosive and it's a suicide bomber who happens to detonate the whole thing at the time, in which case, yes, there could be potential fatalities, but it's unlikely that that's going to happen in any of the major palaces. Or of course, maybe it could just be somebody had a bad turn when they were at the wheel. They could have took a fit or they could have took a heart attack and maybe just veered off the road and into the palace gates. Anything is possible, but if you're going to launch a terrorist attack on any major place in the UK, driving a car at it probably isn't going to accomplish a great deal when it comes to, you know, mass loss of life. Thankfully, we don't want to see that.
I'm off talking about the mainstream media making a mountain out of a molehill. I remember the Downing Street one. Somebody apparently crashed into it and it was at about 2 miles an hour. The person got arrested. I wonder if this will be a similar story, but they can still use it for a security angle, can't they, Gemma? You know, there's a big difference between someone, you know, losing control of their car and going in at 60 miles an hour and maybe gently 2 miles an hour and tapping the gates.
Well, in this instance, the car crashed into the wall of Windsor, which is, I think, the most historic old royal residence that we have. I think it was the original castle. That would make sense, actually, given the location it's on a mound surrounded by water. But it's into the brick wall on Thames Street. It's the front wall. And it doesn't look as though it was going at 2 miles an hour, judging by some of the images now that we're seeing being circulated. It was going faster than that. The front end of this Volvo is completely smashed in. Okay. And emergency services did treat one person at the scene straight away once they were called. So there is some debate about how and why this has happened. It looks like a head-on collision with the wall with just this one particular vehicle, although there were three involved. And the roads still do remain closed, which means that obviously the police and emergency services will be carrying out all the usual investigations like measurements, the tyre skid marks, all of those things that normally you would only get in a fatality, actually. But they've kept the roads closed while they investigate exactly what is going on. And I do think the fact that it happened 3 days after the man crashed his car into the gates of Buckingham Palace, he was arrested and he has been detained under the Mental Health Act. So we don't know the specifics around that case either. But it's quite a short juxtaposition between the two events happening. And of course, Kate, Princess of Wales, and William were at Windsor Castle yesterday. And of course, the furore over the headlines over that photograph, that Mother's Day photograph, have gone global. Now, I'm not saying the two events are linked. There's no speculation on that at all. But, you know, to crash your car into a royal residence, and it does look as though from the images that's the case, it's quite a thing. Because as you say, Rick, the security around these buildings are completely watertight. There were snipers, the whole thing. It's the royal family. It's the British royal family. The roads are still closed. It's causing a significant amount of disruption. Whether the two are linked, we don't know. Whether this is part of a trend now, we don't know. It's just the royals are in the headlines again this morning here in the UK.
And so I'm sure Gemma will keep us up to date with those, any updates we get in the next hour or so. You also mentioned an asylum seeker has come forward and admitted about people changing religion to stay in the country. We covered this a lot on Open Line, I believe, on and Locked and Loaded. And now someone's actually come out and admitted it. Not a big surprise. We know it's been going on. What exactly has he been saying, Gemma?
Well, this is an asylum seeker called Bilal Jaff, who has revealed to one mainstream outlet here that asylum seekers know that when they come to the UK, especially illegally, that converting the religion from which they've come from is a surefire way of being pretty much granted asylum on the spot. He says the other way that migrants now know that they can guarantee asylum is by changing gender or declaring a different sexual preference and declaring that they're now gay or bisexual. That's another way to remain in the UK. Yeah, some direct quotes from him. He says the best way to get a paper to stay in Europe is to convert from Muslims to Christianity. They will visit a church, get a piece of paper just to stay. After that, they don't care and they don't ever go back into the church building. That's what he has said. Now, this comes ahead of a Home Affairs Select Committee investigation into this whole issue of conversion, because it really kind of exploded into the headlines last month. And the Home Secretary, James Cleverly, said that he would launch an investigation. And the Home Affairs Select Committee is due to quiz the Church of England on the genuineness of conversions and what checks and balances and how they're monitoring the effectiveness of this and the genuineness of the people that come through the church doors saying, I absolutely want to give my life over to Jesus. You know, they think there's not enough scrutiny with this. They're also saying that the Home Office now are saying, you know, look, religious conversion will not guarantee asylum. Well, I think they're having to say that because it seems to be the case of being the opposite for the last 3 years as people exploit this loophole. And the Church of England itself has come out on this today and said, look, it's nothing to do with us. It's the Home Office, not the church, that decides asylum. We just will talk about religion with people. And if they want to convert, that's up to them. It's nothing to do with asylum. That's a government issue. So they've kind of taken up the baton with this as well and said, not our problem. Faith is the issue here. We're not interested in anything else. But very interesting that this asylum seeker has just come out and said, yeah, everyone knows about it. Everyone knows it's a way of staying in the UK and Europe. Deal with it effectively. He's blown the whistle.
So what do we think, Rick? Now this has been highlighted, will the Home Office take this more seriously or is it going to continue happening?
Oh, it's going to continue happening. In fact, if anything, it'll get worse, Natalie, because remember when the government says that they're going to do something, it gets worse. So when Priti Patel said she's going to stop the channel crossings, they got worse. When Suella Braverman said she was going to boot people into Rwanda, nobody went. They kept flooding across from France over to the UK. So now that this has been highlighted with the Church of England, there's been a lot of bogus conversions to Anglicanism, I would say, if anything, people are going to be watching it going, hang on a minute. Does that mean if I profess to be a follower of Jesus or I'm a lesbian man or woman who's in the middle of a transition, I can get access to the UK quicker? They're going to be flooding in even more. I wouldn't be surprised to see the pews of the Churches of England busting at the seams with all these converts to Jesus or possibly just chancers. Economic chancers coming along trying to get their foot in the door in the UK. That's just my little cynical take on it.
Is this the mainstream media, Gemma, playing double agent and putting the story out to encourage more people to come and do the same rather than actually take action?
Well, I don't know is the answer to that. That would be speculation on our part. You know, the facts of the matter are, though, that the Home Affairs Select Committee are going to quiz the Church of England. And ahead of that select committee panel convening, the Church of England has said, it's not our problem. You know, we don't decide asylum. That's your job. Our job is to talk about faith. That's our job. People want to convert. Brilliant. Because, of course, the more money in a congregation, there's more funding available. There's all kinds of things that happen when you've got more people in your parish, ostensibly a member of your church. So there is an incentive for them to get bums on seats, as it were, even though it looks like once they've got the piece of paper, there's no bums on no seats in any churches anywhere. That's from what this guy is saying.
No.
But the church is not rolling over with this one. And historically, you know, the relationship between the church and the state has always been one of, you know, a mutual kind of disrespect and respect at the same time. With, you know, it wasn't long ago that the church was the leader of the UK. It wasn't Parliament. So the church has said, tough luck. We're doing our job. You do yours. And it'd be interesting to see how that Home Affairs Select Committee meeting and investigation actually goes as a result of what we've seen today.
Well, there certainly does seem. Don't you go, Rick?
I was going to say, there's three times you'll always guarantee the pews are going to be full in the Church of England, and all three times people will have things thrown on them. So when the babies are born, they want them christened, so they throw water on them. The church is full. Then they don't get seen again until they want to be married. Then the church is full again, and they throw confetti on them. And then they aren't seen again until they die, in which case they throw dirt on them as they're lowering them down into the grave. So if you want to boost your numbers, try and focus on an elderly congregation that's about to die, or a young congregation that all want to get married, or a brooding population that all want to have little bambinos. That's how you're going to get it. Thrown on you, water, confetti, dirt. That's how it works. That's the circle of life in the church. So there you go. I'm a little bit cynical about it, as you can probably guess.
Absolutely. And I was going to say, there does seem to be a trend, which we cover a lot here on TNT Radio, of passing the buck and not taking any accountability or responsibility. So thank you, Gemma, for bringing that to us. And now we've got a guest after the break here at Today's News Talk.
TNT's Abby Roberts.
Church of England seeks partners to create $1 billion fund to address legacy of slavery. Everybody, the Church of England, what are you doing? The Church of England will aim to turn a $100 million financial commitment into a $1 billion fund to address the legacy of slavery in order to reflect the scale of moral sin. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. We need we need to get all those people out of the Church of England. What are they doing? The church should work in partnership with other organisations to create the fund that will be used, and I'm sure not used for any nefarious purposes. Oh no, raising that amount of money surely will not go into the wrong hands. Because that would never happen, would it?
Abby Roberts on TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
Our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are back, and we everything is changing today, but you can tell
everything
we are live.
Everything changes but you. We're a million. Anyway, don't start me.
Yeah, I don't want to do any singing, but you can tell we are live. We are uncensored and we are unscripted. Me and Rick are going to cover and talk about some headline stories over the next 10 minutes. And then after that, we've got Ash, aka Dutty Monkey. I'll say it right this time, coming on afterwards. So yeah, Scotland, let's move up to there. They have some controversial hate laws coming into first. They're going to take effect from the 1st of April. Good old Hamza Yousaf, our favourite, he said, "It doesn't really make any sense to me," but he said, "No one would be found to have stirred up hatred if they state their belief in a robust manner." So I don't know what he means by that. But apparently you'll still have your right to freedom of expression, but you just can't talk hatred about anybody. But the concepts seem mutually exclusive to me. So I don't know what you make about this one, Rick.
It's an interesting one. The headline is very specific here. It just says the law criminalizes stirring up hatred against sexual orientation and gender, which will take effect from April. So that's something we've been conscious of. You know, there's a big push that you can't say this in case it offends this group. But the question is, Natalie, who decides what's offensive or not? And I heard someone making a comment. I can't give you the source of it, but it makes sense. It's that offense is not something that you can give. Offense is only something that you can take. So I could say something to you right now that you might find offensive, but I could say it to somebody else who doesn't find it offensive in the slightest. So am I giving offense or are you taking offense? So that's the question. Who decides what's offensive or not, and who decides whether or not it's given or taken? This story here also encompasses other things. So the bill was heavily criticized throughout the process. Ministers repeatedly forced to climb down on certain provisions, such as the impact. So it will create an offensive stirring up against the following, just to give you an idea. It also includes age. So I could make a joke about old people. old people could get offended. Rick could end up in prison. Also disability, religion, sexual orientation and gender identity, and also matching an offence based on race that's been on the statute books for decades. So just about everybody that could be offended is categorised in this new law that's coming in from April. And we obviously haven't had any testing of it yet. Time will tell with this one. But like the guy who done the stickering, the Sam Malia or whoever he was, he's doing 2 years now for stickering. At least that's the headline offence in that one. So maybe coming up north of the border into Scotland, they will also be done for similar offences. But it could be, you know, put a nasty sticker up about old people or about, you know, whatever, you could end up doing time. So another tightening of the screws, Natalie, with regards to the so-called freedom of speech in the UK.
Yeah, personally, I think if you're going to put this type of law into place, it needs more detail and more explanation, because at the moment it just basically says, you know, you can't speak hatred, supposedly, like you said, about age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, gender. Well, what does that really mean? Can you not just disagree with what the government says? As you said, it really needs to set much more clear guidelines, which at the moment it doesn't. And the problem is, without any clear guidelines, it's open to interpretation, and that changing in the future too. So what they could interpret as hate today could be different next year and the year after that. And that's the problem for me. Without that being stipulated, it really does mean that the future could not be very promising. Mm-hmm.
No, and the other thing is, Natalie, I think because of the vagueness of this, there's large question marks over it. So that puts the frighteners into people. Well, I'm not sure if I can say this or not. So I'll just be on the safe side and I'll keep my mouth shut. I won't express my views and opinions. I think that's what they're playing on as well. So in Ireland, as you know, they're trying to bring in a hate speech, update the hate speech legislation here. And when the government were pressed, well, what is hate? How do you define hate as the government? They couldn't actually give an answer. They couldn't actually define what hatred was. And then when they were pressed further, well, you say that this is being, this social media is being abused by right-wing extremists. When they were asked to define what a right-wing extremist was, they couldn't actually define that either. So these are government ministers that are in power trying to push through legislation that can't actually define what you and I could be prosecuted for because there's been no test cases on it. So again, I think that's to put the frighteners into the general population to say, well, I'm not sure about that. That could land me in trouble. That could land me with a fine. That could land me to lose my job or get locked up. So I'm just going to be quiet instead. I think they're playing on people's fears here because of the lack of clarity also.
And this is the problem with this kind of focus on hate speech. If we move to Ireland, now this is an actual problem that people should be much more concerned with. 115 unaccompanied children apply for international protection in Ireland. This is from families, and they've been separated who have fled their native countries. Roderick O'Gorman has come out and confirmed that referrals to the child protection agencies have increased by 10% since 2002-2023, now standing at a whopping 91,500 children, basically, who could be in some need or some problem. That is something I'm concerned about, not somebody saying a hurty word, maybe online, Rick. But this isn't the focus. It's the hurty words that's the focus. This is a worry in Ireland. I mean, even if it's children that have come from abroad, I don't want to see any children struggling without a family, without a roof over their head. Dysfunctional childhoods lead to dysfunctional adults. Hurt people. This is bad news for Ireland, isn't it?
It's doubly bad, Natalie, because what this article doesn't go on to say is, for example, Minister O'Gorman was answering a question from the leader of Aontu, who had concerns that some of the accommodation that the children are actually staying in does not comply with child safety regulations, which is an accusation that has been disputed by the government. So there's a massive scandal at the minute going on in Ireland where allegedly children are being placed with institutions and with care providers that haven't been properly vetted and haven't passed the rigorous security checks that need to be done before a child can be placed into state care. And there's a lot of children going missing as well. If you want to get your eyes open, look up the Tulsa scandal, T-U-L-S-A scandal, about what's happening in Ireland. And in fact, that's something I think we should investigate investigate and go into in even more detail. So it's bad enough the kids are coming into the country alone, but they're also being placed in accommodation that may not have passed the regulatory legislationary checks to make sure that those kids are safe in the first place. So they could be going from the frying pan and into the fire in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely. I must admit, when I saw Tulsa in the article, I'm like, I'm sure that's a place somewhere else. No, it's not in Oklahoma. Apparently, Tulsa is the child and family agency in Ireland. And as you said, more cover-ups, not doing their job properly, the same as so many authorities that we're seeing, as we discussed with Francis earlier on, you know, incompetence throughout the board. But we're talking about children here, Rick. You know, shouldn't children in our society, in a Western, you know, society, shouldn't they be our priority rather than be, you know, the investigations in Tulsa? Shouldn't this be, you know, going right to the top rather than worrying about hurty words?
It should be. And this guy O'Gorman as well, by the way, there's massive cries for him to resign his position after the crushing defeat that the government suffered last Friday at the polls when the two referenda were put forward about removing mother from the Irish constitution and redefining what a family is in the Irish constitution. O'Gorman was one of the people that was pushing hard to get the constitution amended. Allegations that he misled the electorate as well, and everything was very vague. O'Gorman is on thin ice, as I have no love for any of the current crop of serving Irish politicians and ministers. I believe they're traitors and they are committing treason against the people of Ireland. And this is just another layer to that, Natalie, the story that we're actually covering off now. Before we just take the little break too, I've got a message here on the live chat. Tim from the UK is also a listener that loves TNT. He just called up the station to say how much he loves our show at the moment. So Tim, from Natalie and I, thank you very much for taking the time to do that, because you can't leave the message in the live chat. The guy actually phoned up the station to pass on the message. So big thanks to you. Big TNT salute to you this morning, Tim. So back over to you, Nat.
Yeah, appreciate that, Tim. And we're going to take a quick break now for the headlines, and we'll be back after that short break. Let's see. Here we go.
TNT Radio News.
News. Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. A former Boeing employee of more than 30 years who blew the whistle on the company's poor production standards has been found dead in the US. 50 passengers on board a Boeing 787 flying from Australia to New Zealand have been injured during a mid-air emergency. China has called for the world's largest nuclear-armed states to negotiate a new treaty. And Russia, China and Iran have launched joint naval exercises in the Arabian Sea.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. We are yet to hear if Ash is joining us. So me and Rick are going to continue talking just like it was back in the old days. Yeah, you just can't get enough of us, you know?
Do you know what?
1 hour, now 2 hours, now even more.
Do you know what? Here's the good thing. And I do love live radio. I genuinely do, because you have to be thinking on your feet and you have to roll with the punches and you have to do what's what. Sometimes you get technological issues. Sometimes you can be sick, or sometimes you can forget what you were going to talk about. But the good thing, at least about you and I, is... And I will say this in Natalie's, not defense, I will say this in Natalie's, to give her some props, that's what I'm trying to say. She has been on talking to me since the very start of TNT, when Locked and Loaded was first launched back in January of 2022. She was one of my very, very first guests on Locked and Loaded, and she came on every Friday for the best part of a year. And we had brilliant conversations together, sometimes for up to 2 hours at a time. And then last year, I think you're celebrating your anniversary. Is it this week? You've been doing open line for an hour this week.
Yeah, tomorrow's
your anniversary. So there you go. How would you say, well-oiled when it comes to this business. So it doesn't really matter what's thrown at us. We can roll with the punches, can't we?
We can. Absolutely. That's it. And you get to be lucky and hear even more from me and Rick this morning. So couldn't ask for any better, really. And we've got another story here. Buyers missold holiday caravans as full-time homes. You know, now reading this story, right, it was hard for me to have much sympathy for people because I've always been aware of the law in the UK that if you buy a holiday home, and I know lots of people that do it, they live in it, I think it's about for 9 months, and then for 3 months, you've got to go elsewhere. That's just the way it's always been. And they're saying that a lot of people recently have ignored those laws, and I've got delivery driver Mike Chesworth, 59. He said the contract they signed in 2019 says the caravan was for holiday use only, but they said the owner said they could stay in it permanently, and they believed him. Well, it's hard to have much sympathy, but at the same time, you know, people are struggling financially. They're struggling at the moment with the cost of living crisis. And we do have immigrants coming in who don't have any type of license for holiday home or any type of home, who are staying in posh hotels. Is it really that much of a problem if people stay in a holiday home for another 3 months of the year, Rick, in the whole scheme of things? Yes, they probably should have known, but apparently it's happening more and more. People are buying holiday homes now to stay in for the whole year rather than just the kind of holiday home term, yeah, time, like 9 months or whatever it is.
Well, if it was up to me and you, I think we'd be sympathetic towards somebody that's in that position and say, listen, if it means you're going to be out of your house or you're going to be financially wrecked because you can't stay on for an extra 3 months a year, I think you and I would be accommodating, let's just say. But the problem is that the people running the country and the people running these parks are not so accommodating, and they like to stick to the letter of the law. Now, there's a salutary warning out there for everybody too, and effectively that's what I was trying to get across when we're talking with Ifrat as well about Bitcoin. I will never tell anybody that such and such is the definite way to go. You should definitely go down this road. You should definitely go down that road. Always do your research and always read the fine print. And a lot of these people, Natalie, in this story in particular, buyers missold holiday caravans as full-time homes. There are contracts that are exchanged. Yes, there's a lot of wording in it. There's a lot of fine print in it. And sometimes slick salespeople can simply grin at you and tell you what you need to hear and say, listen, don't worry about that. Just sign up here and people will take them on face value and at your peril. Do that, especially these days, Natalie. Don't take what I say at face value. Don't take what Natalie says at face value, with all due respect to you. Question everything. And then when you've questioned everything, question it again and then think about it a little bit more before you commit to doing anything. And unfortunately, a lot of these older people are being stung out of their life savings and they're being left hand dry because they didn't read the fine print, Natalie. So beware, buyer beware.
You know, me and Rick have always said for the last 2 years, trust no one, question everything. And this comes into this. You know, people have been scammed. I've watched all these programs on the time. Scamming is at an all-time high. You know, people answer a phone call, online dating, and they don't realize that they're supposedly dating. In the end, they find out a man in Nigeria who they thought was a woman, like a big busted woman. And I know I shouldn't laugh, but these scams are literally happening day by day. You know, be suspicious. And if there is a massive difference. If you're on a mobile home park, they have completely different licenses. They're not holiday homes. If you buy a holiday home, there are different laws and there are different permits that you need and all that type of thing. So don't just listen to the salesperson. Always do your research. Always question everything. And if something doesn't feel quite right, you know, go and do more research. Basically, that's what me and Rick are saying, because in this case, it's, like I said, it was hard to have sympathy for people in the article because they signed a contract for a holiday home. You know, it is really sad for them, but I guess, you know, there are manipulative people looking for these type of people to make money off them as well, aren't there, Rick?
Whenever, I'm not going to say I have a confession to make here, but when I used to work in financial services, I used to do a lot of lump sum investments with people, you know, investing a lot of money into bonds and things like that, or moving it into offshore accounts. And if you did business with me, Natalie, I would have to write you a letter after we did the business to outline everything I said, to outline everything that was in the contract, And that letter was called the suitability letter, and it was purposely about 30 pages long. It was generated automatically. You just put a few bits and pieces in, and 99.9% of the customers never read the letter. It was just jargon, and they said, well, I know this guy and I trust this guy, and I never give anybody bad advice and never lied to him, but a lot of unscrupulous people did. Okay. And I remember once at a training course being told by the head of compliance for a huge bank, saying, those letters are not to protect the customer. Those letters are to protect us, because we know they don't read them and everything's laid out in there. So if they ever come back and try and put a complaint, then we can hold up that letter and say, it's in the letter. You accepted it and you didn't question it. So it's on your head. So I think the same thing applies with these holiday home type lets. Please, people, please, just be careful out there. They say a fool and their money are easily parted, so don't get scammed.
I would say in their defense, though, have you not noticed whenever you do anything nowadays, it says you don't move on, like even online, until you read the small print terms and conditions. Have you seen how long they are? Just sometimes time to get on a website. Do you know what I mean? It's like 20 pages. Who in their right mind?
I agree.
Come on.
No one reads it, Natalie.
I must have done it. So, you know, as much as we've just said that, we could be in trouble in the future for ticking agree. It's so hard. How can you go through life reading the small print of every terms and conditions? So,
that's how they get you.
So, you know, we're not even taking our own advice here on TNT, but no, if
don't
you
listen
can,
to us. We don't even take our own advice. So why should you take it?
Yeah, absolutely. But if you can, read the small print and don't just press agree, because this is how they get you. But time to take a quick break here on today's News Talk, and lots more stories to cover next.
JDRF's vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. The type 1 diabetes community is at the heart of everything JDRF does. We were founded by the type 1 diabetes community. In the main, we are governed by the type 1 diabetes community, we're energised by the type 1 community, and we're accountable to the type 1 diabetes community. It's on their behalf that we exist, and it's on their behalf that we must succeed. JDRF exists to rid the world of type 1 diabetes. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So for us, that means rallying all the resources and all the people and all the organisations required to make that a reality as quickly as possible. The world's best researchers, exciting innovative companies, and the passion of the type 1 diabetes community, then delivered through the health system so lives get better every day, day after day, until the day we find a cure. To everybody in the type 1 diabetes community, no matter your age or stage with the disease, whether you were diagnosed recently or a long time ago, we need you to know that we are here working on your behalf to deliver a world without type 1 diabetes as quickly as we can. Thank you to everybody who's supported JDRF in so many ways. You are making our vision of a world without type 1 diabetes possible.
You are loved. You are valued. You are resilient. You got this.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving.
This is a place for crazy people.
Natalie Cheel and Rick Mott.
I think you'll listen.
TNT.
Okay, we are back.
There we go. Yeah, live radio. I was just about to say, you've got me and Rick for the rest of the hour. We are live, uncensored and unscripted. It's just been one of those mornings, but of course, we will be the ultimate professionals and carry on. We've got a story here. We talked about the Tories earlier on and donors. Now, Rachel Reeves from the Labour Party, she's come out and said, even if Labour come into power, we won't be able to turn things around straight away. We're going to inherit the worst economy since World War II. Now, do you know what? When I read this, what I felt, I just thought that it's almost making excuses already. They can almost feel like they've guaranteed to get voted in, but you know, it will just be more public suffering. Nothing's going to change. They're already putting out the feelers to say things are going to be worse under Labour. Yeah, vote for us anyway, Rick, is kind of what I interpreted, you know, her interview as.
This is almost a repeat, Natalie, of what happened when Biden came into power. The Biden administration came in after the last American US presidential election. He said, listen, we haven't inherited all these problems from the Trump administration. We've inherited this immigration business. We've inherited this. We've inherited that. We've inherited this. We've inherited that. Playing the blame game before you even get into power, or as soon as you've set foot through the door when you get into power, is not a particularly good sign. And amazingly, this lady, Rachel Reeves, is already setting the stall, I suppose you would say, because we don't know when this election is going to happen, Natalie. It's probably going to happen sooner rather than later, but it could be as late as next January as the latest point. So what she's saying is Labour will not be able to turn things around straight away if they're elected. What a thing to say. They're not even elected yet. And that should shoot them in the foot, because it's like, well, why would he even vote for you anyway? If you can't turn things around
That's it.
Might as well just stick with the Tories. A very bizarre statement for this Labour lady to come out with and say, maybe she's had her knuckles wrapped about this. If I was Keir Starmer, I would not be particularly happy with one of my representatives coming on the BBC and broadcasting it out, and then people like us pick up on it and run with it, say, well, hang on a minute, why vote Labour at all? You're admitting on TV live that your party can't do anything in the short term anyway, so why even bother?
But to me, it shows the confidence, you know, of the opinion polls, of everything that's going on. The Labour Party believe they've won already. I think most of the country are being told they've won already. So they can put these type of statements out. You know, normally running up to the election, Rick, you know, parties are saying, we're going to do this and we're going to change this and we're going to make your life better. This is someone from the Labour Party. This is Rachel Reeves. And she's saying, nah, we won't be able to improve it. It's still going to be awful when we come into power. You know, that's not normally how you win an election.
No.
Yet it still looks like they're going to.
At least the Tories are lying about what they're going to do. You know, at least they're
consistent.
You know,
yeah.
When I say they're consistent liars and they're consistent underperformers and they consistently don't deliver what they say, but at least they're consistent in not doing what they say they're going to do. Here we have Labour. She said she would methodically identify ways to play for existing pledges on the NHS and schools. She then claimed the Tories and Labour didn't have a plan to pay for their policies, which is quite odd. The interview came a few days after Hunt set out the government's tax and spending plans in his budget, including a cut to national insurance and an expansion of child benefits. So it's a real mess of a message that's being sent out here. And I think, Natalie, what people want more than anything these days is at least some kind of assurance that we're going this direction and we're going to end up in this location. What she's effectively saying is, well, we don't really know where we're going and we're not really sure how we're going to get there. That's not exactly what you would say reassuring for the potential electorate out there.
No, and it only confirms what we've been saying for a long time. It doesn't really matter at this point, you know, who you vote for. You're going to be voting for much of the same. It's just another one in a nail in the coffin, so to speak, already. And that's, we've not even started the run up to the election yet. And that's what one in a nail in the coffin, so to speak, already. And that's, we've not even started the run up to the election yet. And that's what we're being told. So very worrying indeed. Another worrying story. This was reported in the Daily Mail. Elderly patients are being treated like animals and left to lie in their own urine on overstretched NHS wards, claims. One patient, 99, was left traumatised in a bed next to the body of a dead woman. Hospitals are treating the elderly like animals, according to a new shock investigation. It's a hard read, this one, Rick. Lots of questions being asked here about the standard of care.
Here's the thing. A lot of people in when the NHS relatives...
and what are happening to elderly patients.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they're taken into hospital or they're taken into care, there's concern naturally from their relatives or their loved ones. Are they going to be looked after? And many, many people actually go and visit their relatives in hospital. I hate to say this, not because they want to see how they're actually checking to see that they're not being left to sit in their own excrement, or they're not being mistreated, or they're being fed the right type of food, because sometimes they can't eat the hospital food. And in this case in particular, some of the stories in here, I don't want to go into the exact details of them, but you know, one patient, as you have said, 99, was traumatized, left in a bed next to the body of a dead woman. The elderly are being treated like animals. You've got to remember too, a lot of people that are being brought into the care system at the minute are coming in from overseas we don't really, and this is not bashing people coming into work in the UK, but I'm just saying this is a fact. A lot of people maybe don't speak the language. They're on minimum wage. They're being treated like dirt by their employers. They're getting frustrated, and they've got the dirtiest jobs in society to do. So when you put them into the mix as well, it doesn't bode well for elderly people that are in care, or in this case, in the NHS. That's assuming they even get the award, Natalie. How many times are we reading about people that are spending days on trolleys or sitting in chairs for 5 days with headaches, tension headaches, before they even get seen or by a consultant? That's assuming they get the award. Many of them don't even get there.
And that's the problem. The particular one that I thought was worrying here last week, a pensioner who was left in excruciating pain also said how he had to dial 999 from his own hospital bed for help. Martin Well was admitted to Salford Royal Hospital last year after developing a spinal infection, and the 73-year-old was denied pain relief because of staff shortages. A doctor who assessed him after was the most neglected patient I have ever seen. An investigation by the Northern Care Alliance is still running and apologises for the serious harm and their failings on that one. But I mean, imagine having to call 999 from your own hospital bed. What type of pain must you be in? And, you know, I mean, I've had experience recently. My nan passed away and I had to go and see her, and she didn't even get to a ward for several days. She was put in A&E. There's a massive problem. But I also think there's questions to be asked as well about, you know, we discuss euthanasia, but I'm talking about, sometimes I feel that older people are kept living when they don't want to live as well. I've got a, you know, my nan was asking at the end, you know, they were keeping her alive and she didn't want to be kept alive. She kept saying, come on, come on, I've had enough. She was trying to take the mask off her. She didn't want to be treated. I've got another friend who's Barbara's going through horrific dementia. Now, he can't feed himself. He's choked on his own spit, yet that he's still being kept alive. I don't know, you know, what's morally or ethically correct in these cases. And I wonder if we could, you know, get something in place that says, and I'm not being funny, I'd be signing it. If I'm 80 years plus and I'm in that situation, I don't want you keeping me alive. If, you know, if you're keeping however many of those type of people alive who have got absolutely no quality of life or chance of, improving, you know, is it fair? You know, I don't know what the answer is, Rick, but there is problems across the board. And I'm not sure, some people are being treated that shouldn't. Some people don't even get any treatment. And there needs to be a whole investigation needs to be looked into how we can improve things.
You know what the worst thing is, Natalie? When you, if you reach an old age and you've probably worked all your life, you've paid your taxes, you've probably been a law-abiding citizen, you probably haven't done anything really bad to anybody. If you reach the end of your natural life and you know you're on your way out, at least you should be dying with a little bit of dignity. You should be dying with people that are around you that are showing you love and compassion. I hate the thought that there are people out there in their 90s, in this case, 80s and 90 years of age, when you think of what they've been through in their lives and what they've probably contributed to society, to end their days, you know, lying next to corpses, in beds with their own feces and their own urine soaking into their sheets, not being fed or being neglected or physically abused, possibly by some members of staff. I can't imagine a worse way to end your life at all. But sadly, this story just highlights that that's the end of very, very many old folk in our societies. And there's an old quote, I'm not sure who it's attributable to. It's an old American president. He says, you can judge a society by how it treats its elderly, its infirm, and its children. So you look at the way children are being treated at the minute, you look at the way the infirm are being treated at the minute, and you look at these stories to do with the elderly and the vulnerable, how they're being treated by the government and by the system, that is simply a damning reflection on the society that we are in at the minute. I'm sorry to say this, but it's disgusting. And I would rather die than go through that inhumanity that suffering and that misery at the end of my life. Maybe that's what they want. Because aren't they trying to push a euthanasia? Aren't they trying to say, it's so damn bad in that nursing home, Rick, I would rather just you send a DNR notice and I don't want to go through that misery. Maybe that's what they're angling at, Natalie.
Maybe it is, because what I'm saying is that some people, the way they are living their end of their lives, it's so awful, we wouldn't even treat a pet like that. You know, you mm-hmm. wouldn't. You'd go put them. Mm-hmm. You'd go put them down. So, you know, if that's what we've got to look forward to, is that how they will bring on more? Or, you know, like a euthanasia type bill. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why we're going to see more stories like that. But there also is an ethical question. You know, it's up for that person to decide. I personally wouldn't want to live myself if I've got no quality of life. So I do think it should have some personal decisions there. But that should be made when people are much younger, and when they can actually make those decisions, not obviously when they're much older and it's going to be harder for them. Okay. We've got another story as well. We've talked about statues a lot recently.
Yeah.
People like to get focused on them, the old statues. And it also proves this one to me that people will moan about anything nowadays. This is the problem with social media, right? Anything that anyone says, there'll be something that people will go mad for. There'll be pros, there'll be cons, but everyone will have an opinion. This didn't even seem like a big thing to me, but of course it is. Winchester Cathedral has hit back at criticisms that it's planned an £100,000 Jane Austen statue. It's been called a cynical cultural misappropriation. It could turn the place into Disneyland. The only thing that I could argue is, should we be spending that much on a statue at a time at the cost of living crisis, possibly? But they can make a mountain out of a molehill, can't they? What do you reckon? Cynical cultural misappropriation for a statue?
Well, there's a whole lot in this one. Okay, number one, what I can't get my head around is the statue's 5'7", so it's not particularly big. That's about my height, and I'm not exactly what you would call, I'm vertically challenged. So 5'7" is about my height. If you were to make a statue of me, mind you, I'm probably wider than I am tall, so it could be more expensive in that respect. But how can you spend $100,000 on a statue of someone at 5'7"? I'm looking at some of these sculptures that are looking to be unveiled, and it doesn't look like $100,000's worth of labor or materials to me, Natalie. So how the hell they can justify the expenditure in this, I do not know. They're also complaining to say that it will turn the area into Disneyland. I don't think so. Somehow I can't see people running around with Mickey Mouse ears on there and screaming Donald Duck. They're going to be going to the area. They're going to be investing in the local area. That's assuming they're actually going to make the journey to see a 5-foot statue of Jane Austen. Would you go out of your way, take the kids, say, hey, we're going on a road trip this weekend. Where are we going, Mum? Well, we're going to see a statue of Jane Austen. It's 5'7", and, you know, we're going to pump loads of money into the economy. It's not going to happen. I think they're making a mountain out of a molehill with this one. And scandalous waste of money.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a phone call to end the hour as well. We've got Wayne on the phone from South Wales. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning. Good morning, Natalie. Good morning, Rick. Is this still morning? Yes, it's still morning. I'm so used to you being on all sorts of times at the moment. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, we're good. Thank you. How's you?
I'm really good. I've just listened to your conversation about statues. And it's funny how... So during I'm going to call it the pandemic, scamdemic, whichever you want to call it, so you know which side I'm on. So during that, you had the Black Lives Matter demonstrations in Bristol, where they tore down a statue of Edward Colston and threw it into the harbour. Can you remember this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah. So now they've gone from having these figures. It's like deleting history, maybe. We had these figures who were important in a certain time of history, whether I understand they were slave traders or they were their boats were used for slave traders, whichever it was. But this is history, and trying to erase it is ridiculous. And what I've seen noticeably in town centres and cities is that many of these political statues and things of the past have been replaced by popular culture, by things like sportsmen, or mainly sportsmen or TV figures. It never really seems to be anyone important from the past, just celebrities. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, and I mean, here as well, I mean, this is Jane Austen that's going up as a statue. And as you rightly said, that's what people are moaning about, again, because it's a more of a historical figure that, you know, people find something to complain about, don't they, Rick?
They do. And you not find as well, Wayne, this is all very Orwellian. You know, they're trying to erase history. It's happening in America a lot. They're removing statues from universities. They're removing statues from public places in America. They're renaming streets in the UK because it could be offensive to certain people. In Plymouth, they're trying to rename streets. They're trying to get rid of statues of Sir Francis Drake. So I think, Wayne, if you dig deep enough into anybody's past, you're going to find a reason not to erect a statue to them. I know if you did a deep dive on my history and someone said there's a statue of Rick Munn going up in Belfast, I guarantee you there'd be at least 24 people saying, I think that's a bad thing because he did this and he did that and he did this to me and he said that. So they're always going to find something to complain about, but I think it's very sinister. And most of these statues, Wayne, as well, they're an absolute eyesore. They're being good sculptures are being replaced by these modern art, horrible interpretations of what people actually look like, which I think are an eyesore, let alone the fact that they should never have replaced those statues in the first place.
Absolutely. One of the premier venues in Bristol was called Colston Hall, world famous Colston Hall. And they've had to rename that. I can't remember the name of it right now because my friend went to a concert there last week. But I just thought it's interesting that just within one generation, people won't know it as anything else, won't ever know it as a Colston Hall. It's almost going to be rewritten out of history. And I feel that's quite sad. And we all know where this is going. But to see it happening right in front of our eyes is quite breathtaking.
Yeah, I've said before, Wayne, that if you put... if you want upset about the statue, if you want to put another like placard up next to it and explain why it's not appropriate now, that's absolutely no problem. But removing our history is. So we don't want to see any of that. Thank you, Wayne, for getting on the phone. I can hear the music. It's that time now. So
I'll
be back
tomorrow.
Can I just
say as well, great yep. show, both.
Oh, thanks ever so much, Wayne. Cheers. And I'll be back tomorrow. Rick's going to carry on for Locked and Loaded. Have a great day out there. Hopefully no hiccups tomorrow. But we are live, uncensored, unscripted, and bye-bye.